Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Agility Bed. And if you feel like you need a new mattress but have been nervous about buying one online, stay tuned because Agility gets it. Mattress buying can be confusing. That's why they only put their very best mattress online. And you can get it for $150 off by entering code YHL150 at agilitybed.com. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today, John admits what he got wrong about our beach house kitchen. We weigh in on a surprisingly polarizing design trend, and we share our formula for a super cozy bed. Plus, does Young House Love have a board game?
You know how we stop saying hello at the beginning of each episode?
Because it was so awkward to be like, hello, well, hi.
Now I feel awkward about not saying hello.
We just launch into whatever we're talking about.
Yeah, I've doubled back and questioned myself again. So who knows? Hey, guys.
Hello. See, awkward. Nope, I don't like it.
Okay, well, this will be the last time you hear that for a while.
We have a story to tell you, a tale of two fridges.
Yes, as many of you who have listened to this podcast before know, Sherry and I had an argument a few months ago about the beach house kitchen. Sherry did not want a big, tall fridge in the main kitchen, and I wanted some sort of fridge somewhere in the kitchen.
So practical.
Yes. So our compromise was actually two fridges. We ended up with a small kind of mini fridge within the main footprint of the kitchen, like just one cabinet over from the stove so that we could easily grab things. And then that's when we decided to turn what was going to be a breakfast nook into a walk-in pantry so that we could store a full-size fridge in a room just right off the kitchen.
And you guys can see the setup much better in like one of the house tour videos we've shared on the blog. There's not like a door between the pantry and the kitchen. It's just sort of an open doorway that you walk into and grab things from the fridge.
So we've been getting a lot of questions lately about how do we like that setup? And like specifically, do we like having our fridge in sort of an adjacent room, you know, not within the main footprint? Is it annoying? Do we forget what's in what fridge? You know, how do we like having a fridge in a pantry? And so, long story short, we actually really like having it in there. It has worked out great. I'm very happy we made that room into a pantry instead of the breakfast nook. I feel like it's functioning much better for us. And I like having a more full-size fridge than we would have been able to accommodate in the main footprint of the beach house kitchen.
Exactly. I feel the same way. The thing that has frustrated us lately, which is interesting, is that two fridges is actually in some ways not as simple as just having one.
Yeah, mo fridges, mo problems, as the saying goes.
Like, we like the big one in the pantry, and now that we've lived with it long enough to realize it's perfect in there, we're like looking at the little fridge in the kitchen and being like, why are you taking up our valuable real estate, little fridge?
Yeah, we have kind of stopped using that one as much. Like, it's got like some Cokes in it, maybe like a quart of milk, but most everything has gone in the big fridge because you can just put more in there. It's more functional to have our main cold storage just all in one place. So we are actually preparing to get rid of the mini fridge.
Bye, fridge.
And Sherry is also giving side eye to me because I was the one who was so insistent on having a fridge in that room.
It's not side eye anymore. It's more like I told you so.
Potato, potato.
Because John was like, I am putting my foot down. If we are putting a fridge in the pantry, then we are getting a small fridge for things like butter and eggs and things you use often.
I think it was episode 74 where we talked about this big argument we had over the fridge. And yes, as Sherry said, I put my foot down. And I will say here on the podcast, for the record, I was wrong. The foot is back up.
And guess what we're doing, guys? The good news is I was happy to accommodate John's whole mini fridge rant because I was just thrilled to not have a big fridge there. Remember, the argument was I didn't want a big fridge kind of blocking a doorway and making the kitchen feel like it had this big thing jutting into it. And so I got my open kitchen that I wanted by having a small fridge that's essentially below the counter. But the negative thing to the fridge, that when we realized we didn't care about it, it was taking up valuable real estate that could be a cabinet and a countertop. And we only have 8 cabinets in our whole kitchen.
If you count the one that has the trash can in it.
Right. So 7 that are usable. And one of those has the sink and the disposer under it. So it's like half usable.
Yep. And 3 of those are just narrow 15-inch cabinets.
Right. So if you really break it down, what's much more valuable than a second fridge is a big base cabinet that could go in its place. And then we could extend the countertop, which is something we have longed to do ever since the fridge went in there. People have said, hey, it's a mini fridge and it's under the counter. Why don't you put the counter over it? But it's like just slightly too tall, maybe 2 inches too tall.
Well, in some ways it's nice because it's actually the exact height of the countertop, so it lines up a little bit. but because it's that height, you can't put counter over it. And it's kind of a little bit awkward to store things on top of it because it's not completely flat, like it's slightly rounded. So countertop would be much better than the top of the fridge there.
Right. It'll look much nicer, I think. It'll give us functionally a lot more. And then the cool thing is that now having lived with it, we can tell you guys, as long as your pantry doesn't have like a door and it's not far away, I would actually recommend a fridge and a pantry. I wish I had the pantry that we have at the beach house in our own house. I love the storage. I love the fridge tucked in there. I always struggle with a fridge being this weird big element in a room that doesn't have many other big elements.
But like we made it work in our kitchen here at home, I feel like, because we did a whole wall of cabinetry and it just kind of sinks into it.
Yeah. Oh, we made it work. I just here I have like four cabinets that I call a pantry in quotes. And at the beach house, we have like a room that's a pantry.
We could turn our dining room into a pantry.
That would not work.
It'd be the world's largest pantry.
It'd be really weird. And it'd be like off the front door. So you'd enter the front foyer and see like a pantry.
You're saying that's weird.
I think it's weird.
I think the good news is that it's not a terribly inconvenient mistake to correct. I mean, yes, we spent money on the fridge. I think it was about $300, and we'll probably end up Craigslisting it if we can't find another spot to use it in. So yes, some money lost, but not a huge amount.
And I just think it's about sunk cost. You know this theory that when you spend $300 on a mini fridge, that's sunk cost, but you shouldn't hold on to the $300 mini fridge like with your cold dead hands if it's not working for you, because you're being so stubborn, you're sort of closing yourself off to the possibility of moving beyond your mistake. And so when I look at the mini fridge, I'm glad it was something that's easily changeable. It's not like saying, ooh, we don't like the 40-inch stove, which has the hood hung exactly centered over it, which has sconces centered over that. Like there are a lot of things in this room that would be a lot harder to change, but unplugging a mini fridge, you know, it's not even really installed in any way. It just plugs into the wall. And like, yeah, we might lose some money, but at least we have a kitchen that's going to work the best it can.
Yeah. And for anyone keeping track from last episode when we were talking about our disagreements, this is one win for Sherry.
One, guys, out of a million. But I'm basking in it. Can you hear the excitement in my voice that John said, I was wrong about the mini fridge?
You get an entire What's New segment dedicated to it.
I'm just also excited about gaining everything that we're gaining. I think it doesn't serve anyone to think about how you made a mistake and be like mad about it. I think it serves everyone to kind of move past it and figure out what to do next.
To eat my crow and move on.
Right. Like, I'm really happy you're not like, no, it's really functional for my Cokes. Like, you don't even know what's in it all the time. We're going to both fridges looking for it. So it's nice to be like, now we're going to have one fridge again. We're going to know where everything is. The fridge is so big we can fit a pizza box in it. Like, everything about it meets our needs and it should meet the needs of our renters. So I'm happy to be in that place with you. We're agreeing on it together. Seeing eye to eye. Bye, little fridge.
Peace out, fridge.
Yo, home. Smell you later.
Nope.
Look to my kingdom. I was finally there. Tell you how I became the princess of a town called Cape Charles.
It just rolls off the tongue. Well, and for anyone who needs more visuals about this whole fridge pantry thing, we will put some in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast so you know exactly what we're talking about. Maybe I will even put the floor plan so you can see exactly how close the pantry is to the kitchen.
Yeah, if you guys listening don't go to our show notes, you're missing out because they're like as long as a post. There are like tons of pictures, all the links. We overdo it. And I acknowledge that and they're there for you guys.
But now I want to get into one of our favorite segments and it's called, Can We Just Talk About...
It's always a lot of air dancing when that music plays.
So this week, can we just talk about backwards books? Are you guys familiar with this whole sort of controversial topic about putting your books on a bookshelf spine in so just the sort of neutral colored pages show?
And people have strong opinions.
They do.
People get ragey about it.
Yeah, and that's the part I'm not sure I totally understand. I saw an article recently on Elle Decor's website entitled, Can We Please Stop Acting Like Backward Books Are a Legit Trend? And I will highlight some quotes from this rather passionate writer. She started the article saying, there's a John Waters saying that if you go to someone's house and they don't own any books, don't have a romantic encounter with them. Well, if you go to someone's house and they have turned all their books backward on the shelf, run. That person is a sociopath.
Then she says, if I come to your house and you've done this to your books, I'm flipping over your coffee table because an upside down table makes just as little sense as a book filed on the shelf with its spine in.
Again, strong feelings about these backward books. Probably some people out there listening have some strong feelings as well about it. I think if you do this, you are not a sociopath.
Maybe. You could be.
Well, you could
be. Anyone could be, John.
But not for that reason. I do think personally that the spine-in thing is probably a little bit impractical.
Yes, practical John can't get behind it. I also can't get behind it just because I'm not known for being practical, but if I'm looking for a book and it's spine-in, how am I going to find the book unless I'm turning every book around?
I mean, I think generally we fall in the category on most things of like, hey, do what works for you. It's your house, whatever. You know, I'm not going to call you a sociopath like some people. But for me, it feels like it belongs a little bit more like in an anthropology store display than in someone's home. But the thing I don't understand is just the fury about it that some people feel.
Well, I think people just like to call other people out on doing things that they think make their life harder, or I guess we keep saying impractical, but they just like don't work. It's like turning all your spices backwards and trying to guess from the back of the jar what they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think when you're decorating with books, and we can talk a little bit more generally about how we use books in our decorating, but I think they're an interesting animal in homes because there's kind of like a spectrum that people fall on where some people really just treat them as like decor objects. Like they come purely from a decorating standpoint where like I buy a book because it's a certain size and shape or color and it will fill a spot on my coffee table or on my bookshelf.
Right.
Like that's one end of the spectrum. And I think there's other people who have them in their home more from the, I don't know, literary standpoint where that's like kind of their trophy shelf. And it says something about how intellectual they are, how well-read they are. So I think if those are like the two ends of the spectrum, you and I probably fall somewhere in the middle of it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, people ask us all the time, are all those books you have on your wall-to-wall built-ins? Because we have a built-in bookshelf that kind of goes around a big doorway between the living room and the kitchen. Have we read all those? That's like a common question I get. And I say like, yeah, I mean, other than I think three or four were given to us by family members. Like we inherited a really old Better Homes and Gardens thing with like a pink spine that I've never read. It's really, really old-fashioned. But generally, most of them are books we've read and saved because we like books as objects.
Yeah.
So like when we go to buy it, if we know it's a book we're going to read, maybe I'll read it, then John's going to read it, and then we're going to keep it, we'll buy it in hardcover because we know then when we take the jacket off, because we don't like keeping the paper jackets, we take them off and reveal sort of the really pretty fabric spines. And maybe that's another question that I have for people who turn them around. Like, I think the fabric spines are very beautiful. Some of them have like a foil. Some of them have really interesting patterns and shapes on the spine.
Yeah, but I think you're starting to get into when people are putting them up for decor purposes, some of the decisions they have to make because the fabric spines are often some sort of color. And if you have a very neutral home or a very minimalist home, like a very Scandinavian style where you don't want a lot of color, or you just for some reason don't want color on that spot on your bookshelf, like you don't have a lot of options. I mean, you could cover them in paper.
Yeah.
Which I've seen people do.
That seems more functional to me, honestly. I'm not just saying cover them in paper and then you can't tell what it is. I would write on the spine, you know, or print a label so that you could tell what they are.
See, that still feels like a lot of work to me.
It takes some time, but then you at least can find something.
I guess I am saying I understand why people would make a choice about how they display them that may be impractical, but if it's what you're trying to achieve in a certain look or room, like we make decisions sometimes that are not perfectly practical because we like the way they look. I mean, speaking again of this bookcase in our living room, when we started to fill that out after we built it, we did take the time to sort all of our books by color.
Right. And everyone listening, that was not our original plan.
No, we originally didn't do it. We just put books up.
We put books everywhere because I see in Pottery Barn all these beautiful catalogs when they're not turned around. Sometimes I really like the randomized different colored spines, a black one next to a gray one, next to a red one, next to a blue one, just like all random. But then when we did that, we were like, yee. I don't know if it's because it's an entire wall. I don't know if it's because it's around a cased opening so you see a room beyond it. But something about taking all those books in all like jumbly bumbly, plus there's the island, there's four stools. Like you see a lot of things beyond that doorway.
Yeah, there was a lot of visual busyness that the books contributed to when they were kind of a random chaotic grouping. So we group them by color, which I want to be clear is not the rainbow grouping that some people do. Like you've seen on Pinterest, all those bookshelves that are like a perfect spectrum of the rainbow. Like they go from the red shelf to the orange, yellow, green, blue, whatever.
Right. No, ours is just like there's a group of white ones, a group of black ones, a group of blue ones. But my argument for grouping with color, not the rainbow grouping, is that I am not good at remembering authors alphabetically or titles of books alphabetically.
Sure, he's not so great at the alphabet, guys.
I just much more easily can remember the color of a book. Like if you're like, oh, what's that rubber ducky book about the environment you read? I'd say that's bright yellow. I remember it well.
Well, but see, I think you and I don't really go back and reread our books. Like, yes, it is helpful to know where they are. But once I've read a book and I put it on the shelf, like it almost at that point becomes a decorative object to me or a a trophy on my bookshelf to say, like, I've collected these books, because I'm not really a rereader of books. I guess if it's like a reference book or a decor book, I might go up there more than once.
Yeah.
But once I've gotten to that last page, I immediately forget all the characters' names. And it goes up and I'm on to the next book.
Yeah. Well, I read things occasionally over. And what I do find is I loan a lot of them to my friends. Like, I'll be talking about some book and my neighbor will say, oh, will you just leave that in my mailbox? And I'll go, I know it's pink. And I'll like go to the pink section, grab it. And it's really easy for me to find again. But you're right. It's not like we're rereading all of these once a year. So we have to like index them.
Yeah. So that's why I think we can make the choice to display them in a way that we think looks good. So I realize this is probably a long detour to talk about books, but clearly it's something people are passionate about. Like, we have been actually asked to weigh in on this issue before on like Instagram and Twitter. Like, what do you think of the backward book trend? And I guess this is our official statement. This is our press release.
Here it is. We're not super mad about it. We don't quite understand
it. I'm not mad
it.
About it at all. I don't
right.
know.
Right. We're not like ragey like some of those people. But I would say that if you're asking what's practical, that's not it.
Yeah.
But also, one other thing I've seen that I actually like better than turning them around is I've seen Pottery Barn use large baskets and they stand them all up in it. And that way they'd look unified within this bigger sort of trunk-like basket, but you would be able to grab a book and find a book that you need. So there just are other options. There's also like storage cubes. We had leather storage ottomans in our first house that I always kept design books in because I could just open the ottoman and grab what I needed. They weren't always on display, but that was a way I stored them. So if you don't want to donate them or you don't want to part with them, but you want a different way to display them other than turning their spines around if they look too crazy, always think about maybe just putting them within a vessel like a pretty basket. And that's just another option.
And we'll put some pictures in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast of some examples of these backward books so you guys can see what we're talking about. You can make your own judgment on it. I feel like this is also a natural place to get people's opinions via a poll, Sherry.
Oh, yeah, we'll bring back the poll. We mean to have a poll in every single show notes and we just forget.
Yeah, we have really dropped the ball on that for like months. But I was thinking, you know, we used to put them in the show notes and I wonder if we should try it on Insta stories now.
Okay. So you guys just have to look at Insta stories within 24 hours of every day to catch it.
Exactly. This is our ploy to get you to watch our Insta stories.
It's just me going to Target, guys.
And polls. Polls now.
Now there's polls.
Well, now we're actually going to switch gears from books to beds and answer a listener question that came to us via voicemail.
Hi, John and Sherry. This is Caitlin from Dayton, Ohio. I have a quick question for you guys. Do you guys have any sort of a formula that you use to make a bed look full and luxurious and just super welcoming? I struggle with how to make a bed look like a magazine or a blog. Thanks so much. Love the podcast. Bye.
One of the reasons I actually wanted to answer this question about making a bed is I feel like it's something that we struggle with, Sherry.
Yeah, until pretty recently, actually, we sort of floundered around. And then the beach house kind of forced us because suddenly we had 3 bedrooms plus a bunk room. So we had 5 beds to make. And weirdly enough, I think doing them all at once was like a crash course. Like in a way, beds here in our house, I just had pillows left over and bedding left over. And at the beach house, it was like all new things that I had to assemble together and figure out. And I feel like that was sort of the way I learned our new quote unquote formula for beds.
We had to face our fear head on.
In Target. In IKEA and Target. Right. With a cart or two full of stuff.
Well, especially when it came to the pillows, because those things are big.
Yeah, we had like 4 carts at Target once just full of pillows.
But before we dive into sort of the mix that we landed on by going through the beach house, I wanted to talk first about what Caitlin mentioned in terms of seeing inspiration pictures and blogs and magazines, because I think some of these really professional photos of beds set an interesting standard for the rest of us. And I feel like I, for a long time, like Caitlin, have seen these luxurious beds that you just want to go nap in and have been trying unsuccessfully to recreate them.
Guys, here's the secret. The marshmallow bed that you see in a catalog, especially like a bedding catalog that's selling layers and layers of bedding, it's layered that way to sell all the bedding. And also there are some tricks going on. Like we've had enough photo shoots at our own house to know that things are sort of double layered to make something look fluffier. And my theory, I'm not on the set of these magazines as they shoot, but I think there's a lot of that double fluffing and maybe 2 duvet inserts inside of a duvet cover. Yours might not look that fluffy, but you couldn't sleep under 2 duvet inserts. So you do the functional thing and it might not look as fluffy, but it's comfortable.
Yes. As someone who hates photographing beds. I mean, we have to take pictures of rooms that have beds in them all the time. And it's like my least favorite room to photograph because it's hard to make it look normal, like to make sure that everything looks straight and smooth and you know, the things you don't really care about in real life, but when you look at it through a lens, it's suddenly very apparent that there's like one persistent crease in a corner that looks funny. I mean, Sherry and I spend way more time shooting a bed than probably any other object in the house.
It's true.
So I have high respect for people who do this professionally and shoot them for magazines and catalogs because I know, I mean, just the steaming involved.
I was just going to say that. There's like two steamers. You know, there's like a steamer and a steamer's assistant. For a really long time at the beach house, we didn't even have a steamer, the item, like an object that steamed. We bought one, we returned it. It was terrible. So we're just shooting things wrinkled and saying, they're wrinkled, we have to steam them.
It's lived in. But I do think, just like with any inspiration picture that you find, like whether it's, you know, of a bed or some other room, if that's a look you want to recreate or somehow replicate in your room or capture in your home, then you really should study it and figure out what elements are creating that look, like what's actually achieving the feel that you're going for. Because I think if you look at these beds in magazines and catalogs, you'll notice like two things that are going on that make them feel so luxurious. And it all goes towards what Sherry was saying is creating volume. And the way they do that is, I think, with two tricks. One is layers, like Sherry sort of said a moment ago. So you'll notice they've got like the sheet and they've got the duvet. Sometimes they even have a bedspread over the duvet.
A matelassé cover?
Yes, or like a throw at the bottom. And then they have pillow upon pillow upon pillow that is just creating the most comfortable looking bed ever. But then if you went to go buy and recreate yourself, it may be very expensive.
Right. Well, they're like hedging their bets that you're going to like one thing in the picture. Yeah. They're like, we're going to put 15 things on this bed and someone's going to buy this pillow and someone else is going to buy this sham and someone else is going to buy this blanket.
Well, and if you did want to recreate that look, you theoretically could go buy everything and, you know, just basically get a bed in a box to your house and recreate it there. But I think when I really stopped to look at some of those heavily layered beds, that for at least the way we live and the way we sleep, it's not very practical because we don't need all of those layers ourselves.
Right.
And you don't necessarily need all those pillows to take off. And if you're a, you know, hot sleeper, you may not want more than one or two layers to sleep under like me.
Right.
And I said there was one other thing that goes into creating the volume, which kind of goes hand in hand with the layers, but I think there's also a lot of overlapping and folding back. I mean, obviously they have to fold back the duvet so that you can see the sheet under it. I think you'll notice that it's folded back not only so that you can see those things, but also because that just makes it higher and thicker. And you see the like multiple layers and multiple textures. And I think that sort of stuff builds toward this feeling of luxury because it looks really like full and like you could just squish right into it if you threw your body on the bed.
Have you guys ever seen that SNL with like a Taco Bell joke and they're like, and then we put it in another taco, then we fill it with cheese, we put it in another burrito, and then we dip that whole thing in more cheese, then we put it in another burrito. Like it's like layered and layered. It's the Taco Bell of beds.
I think the Taco Bell thing ends with them putting in a bag and then pouring a Coke into the bag.
So it's really old. It's vintage SNL.
I will try to find a link and put it in the show notes so you can watch it. It is hilarious.
But anyway, if you look at these catalogs and magazines, often if you stare at it and dissect it, it is like the taco with 1,000 tacos around it. There are so many things going on. So if you think about your own bed and what you really want, the formula, quote unquote, that we kind of landed on for the beach house that has worked so well, I almost can't believe how simple it is, and it works universally. All the beds there in the three main bedrooms are queen size beds. And so my first tip is to buy king size duvets and king size duvet covers. All that does is helps the duvet cover the bed in a non-dorky way. Because the first thing you'll notice when you look at magazines and beautiful inspirational photos and catalogs is you'll see that there's never this short, flat cover on the bed. It's always long. It folds over the sides. It can be rolled back in the bed and it looks fluffy and sort of like enveloping, like a big marshmallow cover.
You know what I noticed recently when I was reading a catalog is because this whole like lived in messy bed look is in now for some.
Yeah, it's like bedhead for beds.
Yes, exactly. Which I almost want to try because it certainly would be easier to photograph. The duvets are like almost pulled off all the way to the floor, which makes them look like they're covering the bed much more fully than they might in real life. It's because they're like tossed out like someone just woke up and stepped off camera.
Exactly. So the first tip to getting that look is to get a duvet cover and a duvet fill that are not too small. So step one, go a size up. If you have a king or a California king, I don't know what you should do. People ask me that and I
think, size down your mattress.
Well, just buy the biggest one you can find. But if you're in a queen, go for a king size duvet and duvet cover. And what I've found is that at least at Target, where we bought a lot of the duvet covers, they actually come with king size shams, pillow shams, because they're king size duvets. So the king sham with the king pillow is much more grand than like a standard sham and a standard pillow. And they still look great on a queen size bed. They don't hang over the edge. You don't have to worry that they're not going to fit. And it's pretty simple. It's like in many cases, just buying one oversized duvet and it comes with those. And then you just get the pillows to fill them. And you've got these three big fluffy elements, the cover itself and the two pillows. And then you know what else I add? One more little decorative pillow in the middle. That's it. So you're basically hiding your sleep pillows, which look kind of flat and not beautiful, with the shams. And then you've got one decorative accent pillow in the middle. I let the pillow guide me. If I see a pillow I like, I grab it. And I can actually put in the show notes for you guys. If you go to younghouselove.com/podcast, I'll put pictures of the three bedrooms at the beach house that we've done. And you'll see that it is a ridiculous formula. It's literally like duvet that came with shams with an accent pillow in all three rooms. And one tip I do have for you is mix and match the shams with the duvet covers. You'll see that in the back bedroom, the duvet is a striped gray and white duvet cover, but the pillows are just white shams. It's because I stole the white shams from a different room that has a white duvet, and then I put the striped shams in the front bedroom. So I've got these layered looks, so it wasn't like striped duvet plus striped pillows. You know, I wanted to break that up.
Well, one thing we should have mentioned actually up front, Sherry, is I think a big part of these luxurious beds, and it has been an element in a couple of the beach house rooms, is a nice plush headboard, like an upholstered headboard as well, because that almost acts in some way like a big pillow to anchor the bed.
Right. It's a big soft fabric thing that looks like you could just melt into it. So yes, it definitely adds the comfort factor.
Yes. So I did want to add, before you start thinking about sheets and duvets, like get the bed right. The one that's in the middle bedroom of the beach house is the one that we used to have here at home that we made ourselves. So I can put that tutorial in the show notes if you want to make your own upholstered headboard, but we also bought one pre-made for the other room. So that's a great place to start. The other thing that we discovered in doing the beach house to sort of like up our bed formula game a little bit was the throw blanket at the end of the bed.
Yes, I couldn't resist, guys. This was kind of like, you know how I said the pillow guides me? If I see a beautiful accent pillow, I just get it and that makes the bed. I also found these great blankets. One is like a blue and white stripe. One is a white with a black thin checker. You'll see them in the show notes if you look at these beds because we're going to add those pictures. But just folding them sort of in thirds and laying them across the bottom of the bed. My tip again is size the blanket to the duvet cover. So you're sizing up. I got king blankets for all three of our queen sized beds, but just fold them in thirds, lay them across the base of the bed. It's layering, but it's simple.
So let's recap the formula, quote unquote, for Caitlin, at least the formula that worked for us. We should disclaimer this by saying that every house is different, just like your bookshelf. But I would say just don't build on your bed just to achieve this like luxurious magazine look if it's not practical for you. So anyways, disclaimer out of the way. The formula, I'm going to see if I can build this from the basics. Nice upholstered headboard.
Right.
Then get yourself a duvet cover that is sized up from your bed. So if you've got a queen, get a king duvet. If you've got a full, get a queen duvet. If you've got a California king, we don't know how to help you.
Get a seamstress. Have her sew two duvets together.
Yes. Pat yourself on the back for being so fancy. And then that will come with larger shams than your bed needs. So like if you've got a queen, you've got that king duvet, you'll have king shams, and two king shams on a queen bed look very full and do the job of covering your sleep pillows nicely. So those can be as ugly and ratty as you want them to be.
Exactly. And then you just add the accent pillow on the front. And if you want extra credit, you fold a little blanket in thirds and you drape it across the bottom of the bed. Again, size the blanket up just like the duvet and the duvet insert. So those are the three things on your queen bed that are king size. You don't size up your sheets.
No.
Someone asked me that. No, they have to fit your mattress. So those stay the same size as the bed.
I realized we didn't really talk about sheets.
I think just a comfortable set of sheets, but that's not going to give you any look. Like you're not going to stare at it and go, wow, those are really puffy sheets.
Well, I mean, if you did want to get something with a pattern or a certain color that worked well with the other things so that you can get that layer look
right
in there. But I think we generally are pretty easy to please in the sheet department. I mean, at the beach house, we just went some simple, solid gray sheets because we figured practically those would be the easiest to keep looking clean. So like Sherry said, we'll put some pictures in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast so you can see pictures of all the beds we've talked about. And if you guys have a question you want us to answer on a future episode of the podcast, you can always leave us a voicemail. The phone number is 571-4-YHL-HAP, as in Young House Love has a podcast.
And up next, we're going to share things that we're digging. Actually, mine is something that I'm enjoying smelling. I'm digging the smell of it. But first, we have to take a quick break. If you read our post last year about shopping for a new mattress, you already know that it didn't go perfectly smoothly. At one point, we tried one of those newfangled online mattress companies, and then we sent it back because it was way too soft.
Yeah, so you might be saying to yourself, well, then why are you letting an online mattress company sponsor this week's podcast? But the more we learned about Agility Bed, the more we realized that all online mattresses are not created equal.
Yeah, here's what we learned talking to Anna at Agility. when I was reading reviews, because we were shopping for a mattress, and I can tell you it is easily the most confusing purchase of the year, because you're reading all these reviews and there's someone who's like, I love it, I've never slept better. And literally next to it, it's someone, don't buy it, it's garbage.
It is confusing. There's a lot of companies that are making mattresses that are literally you haven't heard of in the last 2 years. Agility is made by Therapeutic, which is a company that has been making mattresses for the last 60 years. So if there's one thing we know, it's how to make a good mattress. And that's what we did with the Agility bed.
And that bed is a hybrid mattress, which is exactly the kind of mattress we ended up buying for ourselves last year. So instead of being all foam like most other online mattresses, the one Agility makes is a combination of comfy foams and supportive microcoils.
Yeah, so if you think a hybrid mattress might be right for you, don't take our word for it. Agility bed gives you an 100-night risk-free, no questions asked trial.
And our listeners can get $150 off any Agility bed order with the code YHL150. Just head over to agilitybed.com to check it out for yourself. If you guys ever follow us on Instagram or Insta stories, there was a weird thing that happened a few weeks ago that has spawned a very strange We're Digging. Before I can tell you what I'm digging this week, I have to tell the backstory of it, because a few weeks ago on Instagram, someone DM'd Sherry about this funny dream she had had about us.
Yes, her name was Mermaid Fit Jess. And she said, I just wanted to tell you guys I had a dream about you in the least creepy way. You released a board game, obviously called Young House Love Has a Board Game.
Naturally.
And I made sure it wasn't April 1st because it seemed so random. And then I totally bought it.
I feel like she just stole our April Fool's idea.
I know. It was so funny. So all I did was I took a screenshot and I shared it on Insta stories. And I said, I love you guys so much, because truly these funny stories make me laugh out loud. What I did not expect to happen was suddenly for hundreds, maybe even thousands of DMs to fly around with, you guys have to make a board game, and it can have a little burger icon, and it can be on a board that looks like paint swatches. And suddenly we were all like publicly brainstorming board game ideas, like walk into Target and everything you want's on sale, move ahead 3 spaces. And I was telling John everything, and then John was like, we're not making a board game. So then I shared the John said no screen, and then we did a poll that said, who thinks John's right in saying no? And like 90% of people were like, no, John's wrong and we need a board game.
I just said no because I was like, well, who makes a board game? Like, that is not a thing we do. But then as Sherry and I were talking about it, we're like, well, who makes a coloring book? We made a coloring book.
Like, we made this pact to ourselves that anything that sounded fun, we would do. And actually, someone who follows us works for a boutique game making company. And she said, if you guys really want to make a game, let's do this. And we were like, what? Did Young House Love just make a board game?
No. Young House Love scheduled a call to talk about making a board game. I think what Sherry's trying to say,
game maker as I am with all my experience.
Right. Is that we are like seriously pursuing this idea. We're in what I would call the concepting phase, where we're trying to figure out how we marry the themes that we talk about, you know, DIY, home renovation, design, all that stuff, to what would actually be a fun game. And what we have learned is called a game mechanic.
Right. You have to figure out the mechanic of your game.
Like, is it about dealing cards and collecting cards? Is it about rolling dice? Is it about trivia? You know, what is sort of the game part of it that makes it fun? Because as entertaining as all the conversation was on Instagram with all these kind of funny inside jokes, we realized, like, if we're going to do this and we're going to spend time and the talents of some professional game makers, like, we need to make sure that this has more broad appeal than just like a bunch of inside jokes for some bloggers and their Instagram followers.
Right. To me, it's like the game has to be fun.
Yeah.
More than the game has to have cute little boards and pieces, like a burger shaped game piece or ceramic animal game pieces are adorable, but if the game is not fun, it's a failure.
Yeah. We would like people to actually play the game and hopefully play the game again because it's fun. Like, it stands alone as a game, whether or not it's about a topic they enjoy. And maybe there won't be anything. Like, maybe you won't hear about this ever again.
Well, we did learn that it takes like 2 years to make a game, so you probably won't hear about this for a long time.
That is true. Well, because we learned they do like a lot of testing. Like, that's something that you don't do when you write a book, which is the process we're most familiar with. Like, you actually have to like road test this game and make sure that people have fun playing it and that there aren't like holes in the rules that people can exploit. You know, you want to make sure that it holds up in the real world. But we discovered a game in our research that I wanted to dig this week because we have been having a lot of fun playing it between the two of us and also with our kids. Well, I guess I should say our daughter, because our son is too young to play it.
He pretends he's on my team and then he throws the cards around.
Yes, that's as far as he gets. The game, which some of you may have heard of, is called Exploding Kittens. It's a card game, and the gist of it is that there are certain cards in the deck that are kitten bombs. They're cats that explode if you draw that card.
They're black. When you peel it off and you even see the corners black, you're like, I just blew up.
And so if you pull an exploding kitten, you blow up and you are out of the game. And the only way to keep yourself in the game is to have a diffuse card in your hand, which is just another card that you could draw. And so you basically strategically play cards that keep you in the game and maybe sabotage some of the other players. And the more that we've played it and realized some of the tricks you can play, it's become a lot more and more fun. And even our daughter is trying to figure out some of the ways that she can sabotage her parents.
Oh, she really likes it when she blows us up.
So we highly recommend Exploding Kittens. He also has another board game called Bears versus Babies, which is too complicated to explain.
But it's really fun. We bought both of them. We played both of them. They're just card-based, but they do have some elements where you place things down on a tabletop and build upon them. I mean, in some ways, I like Bears versus Babies even more because I kept winning that one.
Yes. I didn't want to dig that one because that's more complicated to explain. So I'll put links to both in the show notes for you guys so you can check them out. I guess there's also an expansion pack for Exploding Kittens called Imploding Kittens, which we will probably be purchasing soon.
And what I'm digging this week is actually new scents, at least new to me, of Mrs. Meyer soap. Because I have been ride or die lemon verbena soap. I love the smell of it. I even buy the candle so that when I don't clean, I light the candle and it smells like I cleaned. Like, I'm all in on lemon verbena.
Yes. Anyone who's listening to this podcast knows this already.
You know this, right? But I was at Target with my friend. Shout out to Teresa, who goes to Target with me all the time. And we were in the aisle of the soap and she was like, oh, I always love this radish one. And I was like, radish? Why are you smelling radish? And I don't even think I smelled it. I think I was a snob. And I pulled down one called basil. And while she's smelling radish, I'm smelling basil. And then I suddenly was like, what have I done? These are delicious. And I've been closing myself off to these other smells by just sticking with lemon and verbena. So I bought basil. It's freaking delicious, you guys. I love it so much. I know I'm not supposed to describe a scent as delicious because you don't eat the soap, but it's delicious smelling. And then I decided I need to stop closing myself off from these other things. So on Amazon, I noticed there was like a 6-pack of something called Iowa Pine, which is just a winter seasonal. Like, they don't sell it all the time at Target. It's like sometimes available in the winter and sometimes
a limited
not.
Edition, I believe they call it.
Exactly. And so I put that in my cart because my very best friend's from Iowa, and I thought, if nothing else, I'll give her some as like a gift. Like, look, it smells like Iowa. And it came and I love it. Like, I'm really glad I went all in. I did give some away, but I kept some. And so the two I can vouch for that I have smelled and loved, maybe even more than lemon verbena, which I never thought I'd
blasphemy.
Say.
Blasphemy.
Is Mrs. Meyer's basil soap and Mrs. Meyer's Iowa Pine soap. And now my only thought is, do I need to get the candles in those scents too?
Should I try radish? Now that you're not monogamous to lemon verbena, your eyes have been opened.
Yep, my nostrils have been opened. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
And don't forget, if you want to weigh in on that backward book controversy, can I call it a controversy?
I think so.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram. We are at Young House Love.
Yeah, and the poll will be on Instagram in Insta Stories. So in case you're like, what's an Insta Story? Just click on our profile picture. It'll automatically play our stories for the past 24 hours.
Or if you're listening to this late, we'll save it to the story highlights, which is sort of that row of circular pictures under the profile.
Right, so you can watch things now. They're archivable. Instagram's getting fancy. And of course, we love hearing what you guys do while you listen, like FS Columbo on Instagram, who listened while reporting for jury duty.
And as always, there's more to this episode at younghouselove.com/podcast, including photos of those beach house beds we talked about.
And that old SNL video about the taco and a taco and a taco, which is hilarious.
Later.
Bye.
And that's creating volume.
Volume.
What did I say?
Volume.
Volume?
Volume.
Volume.
Nope. That's Valium. It's a pill you take.
Okay, we'll try it again. And that's all towards creating volume.
Nope. Volume. It's like volleyball.
How's that not the right
volume.
Word?
Volume. You're saying...
No, now you're saying volume.
Oh, I am. Volume.
Volume. Like, really...
But not the accent on you. Volume. Volume. Now I need a volume to say volume.
I am saying it normally.
Volume.
Volume.
Yeah, you were saying volume. Like, yummy.
Oh, volume. Okay. Okay, let's try this. And I think that's all towards creating volume.
Perfect. Nailed it.